When computer scientists were creating the World Wide Web, the entire project was steeped in optimism. Early internet pioneers predicted a techno-utopia. You can hear it in this 1996 Declaration of the Independence of Cyberspace.
We are creating a world that all may enter without privilege or prejudice accorded by race, economic power, military force, or station of birth.
That was John Perry Barlow, a co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, reading the declaration. But did you notice what was missing from that list? Charlotte Gee, a reporter with MIT Technology Review, did notice something missing. Gender. Decades later, social media platforms have become havens for abuse, misogyny, and harassment. In a new piece for MIT's Technology Review, Charlotte Gee asks, what would a feminist internet look like? And Charlotte Gee is with us now to tell us more. Hello, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, and I hate to start this way, but I do have to start this way. Set the problem up for us. You know, why is the internet so toxic, especially for public-facing women? There have been many, many surveys that have shown that women in general, and women of color in particular, receive an excessive portion of the online abuse, which isn't to say that other people don't, but women are particularly targeted. So why is the internet so toxic for women?
It's a really good question. A lot of the problem, to be honest with you, is around women who have a platform and sexists who see that and then get enraged or frustrated by this. And as I say in the piece, you know, it's the same message, which is a woman is saying something that I'm finding uncomfortable, and so I'm going to get her to shut up. And the way that this is done is through trolling campaigns, through people that kind of ask repetitive questions to people, just people that are making, you know, life a bit more uncomfortable for women. So it's not a nice place to hang out.
Well, so there are so many factors you write about in the piece that seem to contribute to an overwhelming internet culture. I mean, the fact that venture capital money goes overwhelmingly to men, women make up less than 20% of U.S. tech employees. But you also write that there's a sort of a misogyny that seeps into the online experience. You bring up the concept of algorithmic discrimination. Could you just give an example of what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say in the piece, you know, if you look at Google Images and you search schoolboy and you search schoolgirl, the first one is pretty innocuous. But for girls, it's all kind of sexualized imagery. And that's partly kind of image recognition algorithms. That's bias creeping into that process. You know, I call it like a self-reinforcing misogyny machine. But we're taking the existing bias that exists in society, we're embedding it, and then we're kind of amplifying it. And part of that has also to do with prioritizing engagement, because you know who engages a lot online? Trolls. So, you know, we're kind of almost encouraging this sort of behavior with the way that the internet functions.
So let's wheel it around. Now we've sort of framed the problem. Let's talk about the solution. And how did you conceive of this idea of a feminist internet? And before we get into the specifics, so tell me what you mean by feminist internet, and how did you arrive at some of these ideas?
I mean, the interesting thing about the feminist internet movement is that it's pretty diverse, and mostly it's just a loose collection of activists who are working on trying to redress the balance, the sort of power imbalance that's going on here. It's about pushing things away from big tech and towards individuals. So, for example, making this a more consensual relationship. Which data do you want to share? Are you comfortable with certain security settings? And, you know, we do also desperately need better privacy protections. So there's also a role for politicians and regulators here.